Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. So nice to have you with us on this January, and I got the month right this time, the 9th on the West Coast, already now the early morning hour of 1:05 on the East Coast, or 12:05 in the Central Time Zone. Wow, what a week this has been. It's just been phenomenal. The response from all the shows that we did this week has just been fabulous. And I want to thank everyone that wished us the best and has determined to tune into this show on a regular basis. I would like to give a shout out to a group of folks that listen regularly to this show. Karen, Bob, and Bill, David, Crenshaw, Zachariah, Sheila, Sylvia, the General, and my good friend Jill. Welcome, and so nice to have you folks listening to us. I'm hearing from people in Europe, across the United States, Canada, South America, Asia. And it's really exciting to know that folks are appreciating the message that comes out on this show. People are still buzzing and humming about the interview that we had on Tuesday night into Wednesday morning with Michael St. Clair. And I encourage you, if you haven't heard that show, to listen to the archives. You can also go to my website, directlightproductions.com. And click on Evident Footprints. You'll see the two-hour interview right at the top of the page. Actually went out of sequence. There were so many people asking to hear the interview. And, of course, we have it posted in the archives at bbsradio.com. And if you subscribe for a year, you can download any of the shows on the network. Remember that. Well, this is the evening regularly that Jim Murray is with us. And I got a call from Jim earlier this evening telling me that his flight home had been delayed by about 3 hours. It seems like every time it snows, that happens to us all across the country. Of course, that's the result of global warming. So we have to remember that when global warming strikes and you've got a couple of feet of snow, your plane's going to be late. So in his place, I was fortunate enough to call upon a regular guest that we have on Evident Footprints, and he is a favorite by what you folks tell me. He owns his own website called educate-yourself.org. He is a metaphysical scientist, an investigative journalist, and quite a good author, as well as a good friend, and his name is Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Don. I appreciate you inviting me to be on again. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, you know, this is sort of hallowed ground you're walking on tonight. because Jim has had this slot pretty much all the way through, with a couple of exceptions. In fact, I think Michael St. Clair actually used up the time once back when I was doing three-hour shows. Jim had to, because of that necessity to schedule him on a Friday night, if I was to bring him to the show, Jim graciously moved over to Tuesday that particular week. And I remember that very well because that was a pretty momentous two-week period. Early on in when this show was just getting off the ground.
Yes.
I'm elated with what's been happening. And that's a tribute to the quality of guests that I have on the show. You're one of those also. Your interviews get lots of hits on the website, as we say in internet language. A lot of people listen to your information, and we're going to talk. Being a Friday night, you know, AMC on TV always does their fear movies, you know, the spooky horror pictures.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about some things in the metaphysical realm tonight that are actually captured on video and in photographs.
Yes.
And let's just see where we go tonight.
Okay.
So what did you bring for us?
Well, I thought we could spend a fair amount of this hour talking about a phenomena that I've just accidentally came to notice. Perhaps it was 2 years ago or so, 2.5 years, I'm not sure. I've been taking photographs almost daily if there are either chemtrails being sprayed or if sylphs show up. And usually whenever, in this area at least, whenever we do get a chemtrail spraying, these entities we're calling sylphs show up in large number. And we've talked about sylphs in past shows, and there's plenty of articles, and perhaps regular listeners might know what we're talking about. But sylphs is the name that the ancient Greeks gave to the elemental beings who act as caretakers and guardians of the Earth's atmosphere. There are elemental beings assigned to every part of the Earth. They take care of the forest, gardens, on top of the Earth. There's elemental beings that take care, attend the nature's task in the oceans. There's other types of elemental beings that attend to helping nature in the mineral kingdom. And these air elementals are called sylphs. We started to notice, we've been reporting on chemtrails since the winter of 97-98. I heard a radio show probably in December or January, I'm not sure, probably December of 97, on Art Bell, and it was William Thomas, one of his first appearances on the Art Bell show, talking about this phenomena that he was calling, he assigned the name chemtrails, and he lived up in Vancouver area of British Columbia, and it was remarkable to hear what he was talking about. And I had went to a dowsers meeting the following Saturday, and after coming back from that meeting, I stopped in a store, and as I got out of the car, I noticed these lines being sprayed in the sky, and I told myself, oh my God, those are chemtrails. And I was surprised and really taken aback that they were happening right over my head. I thought this was just a phenomena that was occurring up there in the Vancouver area. I thought maybe it might have been a testing situation, a beta tester. So that was surprising. I had a camera with me. It was a 35 millimeter camera with film. So I took some shots, and I paid attention to the sky every day since that time, because obviously this is a subject that everyone should be aware of first, and number two, concerned about. So anyway, we're documented chemtrails, lots of articles, lots of discussion about it on my website and many other websites as the years rolled on from early 98 forward. And then in 2004, a new phenomenon began to appear. It's these a much larger appearance of these sylphs, and they take on a cloud form. In earlier periods, typically sylphs would not manifest so that you could see it with the naked eye. If you had infrared film, as Trevor Constable did in the late 50s and early 60s when he was going out to the California desert with a fellow named Dr. Jim Woods. He would do a specific exercise that had the effect of creating something of a stirring effect in the ether, and this had the this stirring of the ether had the resulted in attracting UFOs because they can, and what at the time Trevor's interest was in photographing UFOs, and they were using infrared film. They could not see the UFOs with their naked eyes, but when they took shots, typically they would do these exercises in the desert before the sun came up. And so naturally they would go there the previous night, camp out, and then just as it began to get light, they would start this process. Trevor did this exercise, which he was taught to him by a metaphysician by the name of Franklin Thomas. And then standing behind him, 20 or 30 feet, Jim Woods would shoot over Trevor's head into the sky. The goal was to find UFOs on the film after it was developed, infrared film. What they often found in place of UFOs were these huge amoeba-like looking creatures that were just immense, many miles across, and generally had the general appearance of a, let's say, fish-shaped amoeba, and it showed up on infrared film. It seemed to have a nose, mouth, eyes. It seemed to be moving across the sky in a direction. He had no idea what this was. He called them critters at the time. One of his first books, 1958 book, he put the photos in there. And then again, when he published his really big blockbuster master work, The Cosmic Pulse of Life in 75, he included photos of these large aeriform living beings that he called critters. Well, today we know that he saw sylphs. And at the time, they did not manifest in the cloud form, but it seems with the advent of the chemtrail poisoning operation, which is worldwide, with a few exceptions, most of China apparently is not sprayed, and some parts of South America are not sprayed. I don't have a complete list of where there is or not activity, but certainly most of Europe, many parts of Asia, and of course all of North America is routinely sprayed with chemtrails. Anyway, because of this operation, these sylphs manifested in much larger number in the early spring of 2004. So for the first couple of years, I took many pictures, talked about it, posted them, and we just noticed that these sylphs are recognizable because they take on the shapes of animals, sometimes a humanoid shape, various types of even what we call mythical creatures like dragons. And however, I started to notice a couple years ago that there seemed to be, when you take the digital photo particularly and you put it in Photoshop, you can enlarge it. And by enlarging it and varying the contrast, I noticed there seemed to be the overall sylph form, let's say it's in the shape of a wolf or a shark, within the body of it, there seemed to be other faces that made up the larger form. I started to crop out and enlarge these faces, and some of them stood out to me immediately. Some of them looked exactly like a human face. The great detail, hairline, eyes, nose, eyebrows, teeth. It was amazing. Other of these I call etheric images. I had to think of a name. I don't know what to call them. So it's something that's manifesting from a higher dimension into this dimension. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. So I call them etheric images. And I started to crop them out and I started to put up some of these photos that I had taken, and it seems that last year in 2008 particularly, I got a lot of these inner etheric images that show up within the body of sylphs, and there was an incident last summer in which someone from England posted a photo of a couple UFOs that they had taken with a camera that's on a cell phone, which they call a mobile phone in England.
They use the old term, yeah.
Yeah, just mobile, they call them. And anyway, this photograph was published in one of the UK online news organizations, one of the big ones. I forget, I can't remember the name of it. Maybe the Telegraph. I'm not sure. One of the fairly big name established newspapers. And it in turn, I happened to see it on Jeff Rentz's website. So I captured the photo, I put it in my hard drive, I imported it into Photoshop, and I began to enlarge it, just really hoping to see more detail of the ships themselves. They were two rather distinct-looking saucers. And, you know, mind you, it was taken with a camera that goes with a cell phone, so the resolution wasn't tremendous, but just out of curiosity, I wanted to see what the ship looked like. So I started to vary the contrast and try inverting the tones, etc., just to see what would pop out. Well, in the course of enlarging these two ships, I started to notice what looked like etheric images in the space between the ships. And there was particularly what looked like almost a ramp of light that was traveling from one ship to the other. Within that, in its surrounding areas, I seemed to see a lot of these images. So I cropped them and I enlarged them. And when you enlarge them large enough, my God, I noticed some of the faces look like human faces. It's amazing how close they look. And others look like animal faces. It was quite a variety of images. And so we had talked about it together. I probably talked about it on one or two radio shows, and I posted that the piece along with a number of these images cropped out.
Yeah.
And I encouraged other people to try to do what I did. There's nothing really that mysterious about it. If you have this program called Photoshop installed, I have an older version. I think mine is version 7.0, but for my purposes, it's good enough. It's not that difficult to do this enlargement, cropping, and then adjusting the contrast with various controls that are available to you in a Photoshop type program. You don't have to use that one specifically. Anybody can see these images on their own, and I wish I had more available time. I would grab more of them, because every day when they're still in the sky, I notice that there is more of these etheric images than ever, and the size and volume of sylphs are becoming mind-boggling today. It seems that sylphs appear in larger numbers and in far larger size than they did when I first began to notice them in the spring of 2004. So that's how the capturing and the enlargement and the cropping of these etheric images began. They began with what we noticed in sylphs. Now, I just recently posted a couple of days ago an article. It's called Coping with an Alien Presence. In the article, I introduce the story of a woman who's lives on the East Coast in the Northeast. We'll just say in the greater metropolitan New York area. And she's been besieged by manifestations from certainly extraterrestrials, but also other types of manifestations that are being put upon her by both human manipulators as well as alien manipulators. And her daily life is consumed by these apparitions that are taking place in her apartment. Events are taking place on her body, inside her body, outside her backyard window, in her garage parking lot. She lives in an apartment building. This woman's having a very tough time of it for a few years now, and because these manifestations are becoming overwhelming. It's a daily event, and she has sent me over, let's say, approximately 4 months now, a remarkable series of photos that show very, very unusual things. Now, the first series of photos that I put up to introduce the story was the first type of manifestation she was sending me. These are what we call orbs, which many people probably have heard of today. They show up in photograph, it seems, in recent years. And the first time I heard about it, I think, was at a Walt Woods workshop. Walt Woods is a well-known master dowser here in the United States. And he gives a workshop every spring that I usually go to here in Southern California. And it might have been 4 years ago, maybe 5 years. I can't be sure. But Walt showed pictures of this event that he and other dowsers had gathered at. It was outside. It was sort of a picnic-type environment. And in the early evening, they took photos of just people having fun at this sort of barbecue type of event. And when they published a photo, a number of these orbs were seen throughout the photos. Now, I had the notion or impression that somehow, I didn't know what they were, of course, but I somehow felt, because they were associated with people like Walt Woods and Dowsers, etc., I felt that somehow there might be a connection with, let's say, people whose connection to let's say, to things metaphysical is heightened or more attuned.
Either so, that, or they like hot dogs and hamburgers, right?
That's the other possibility. So, I had then a few other people, you know, in the years following, send me photos in which I would see orbs in the photos. I personally never photographed one myself. However, I'm told by people who take the pictures that they do not see the orbs with their eyes at the moment they're taking the picture. They only discover the orb in the photo after the picture is taken. It's usually a digital photo, by the way, that these show up in. They may show up in film photo, I don't know, but the reports I'm hearing are from digital cameras. This lady has a number of usual apparitions in her apartment. She very often cannot physically see the apparition, but she senses the energy. She's sensitive to these manifestations, and quite often she hears a sound associated with it. She also feels a type of pain, and her senses can direct her to the direction of where the energy is emanating. And mm-hmm. what she's been doing is simply pointing the camera in that direction and taking a shot, whether it's in daylight or whether it's in a darkened room at night. She's just clicking the shutter, and she sees what she gets after the event. So these first photos she sent me was of a number of orbs in her apartment. They seem to look like rather large orbs. You know, when you compare them next to the furniture, they might be the size of, if we had to put a size on it, perhaps a very large grapefruit or a small soccer ball, seem to be of that diameter range, 6, 7, 8 inches perhaps in diameter.
Yeah, you know, the for the listening audience, Ken, what you're describing as far as her sensing this energy, mm-hmm. I mean, I've had this experience just standing in the checkout line in a grocery store. So, and I'm sure many in the listening audience have had that feeling where the person either in front of you or in back of you just gives you an eerie feeling.
Okay.
And it's because we can be sympathetic to the vibrations, or, you know, we say we have terms for that, like, well, I get good vibes or I get bad vibes from this mm-hmm. person. Mm-hmm. That's our way of expressing our sensitivity to another's vibratory rate, and it's usually sensed through the aura. So again, you know, you have a light body and you have a light phenomenon going on. These are like balls of light, in essence. Not always perfectly round, but what you're describing is like a floating light bulb.
Yes, almost. They do seem to project a light because they stand out from the background, and they're not reflecting light because in some cases the photos this woman took were inside a darkened room. So at least when a digital camera captures it, they're radiating some type of energy. Now, I simply cropped the orb and I enlarged it in Photoshop, and I applied various contrast adjustments to try to draw more detail from within the orb because of the experience seeing these etheric images inside of sylphs. It seemed to me, let's see what's inside these orbs. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, when you enlarge them, immediately you begin to see these etheric images. Most of them look animalish in nature, sometimes a cartoonish appearance.
Just like the ones we see in the clouds.
Exactly, right. Now, many of the manifestations seem to have an appearance that looks somewhat reptilian in nature. Some of them look like a snake head, some. Others look like an organization of eyes and snout and text and color.
I'm laughing because I've seen that picture so many times, and it's not a mirage, you know, when you see these things. There's a pattern to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And and they seem to also have a, you know, when you do this magnification, what's surprising is that you get very distinct color patterns that show up on these entities, creatures. I'm not sure what we're seeing here. We have to come up with a name, so we'll just call them entities or some sort of manifestation that looks like a creature of some sort.
Well, if I can cut in here, you know, I recall many of them. For instance, when we were looking at the clouds, for example, and the chemtrails, let's say the clouds created by the chemtrails.
Yes, that's more.
And the chemtrails are being eaten up or consumed by these sylphs, and
yes,
and it's definitely a phenomenon that is occurring because
yes,
the clouds are thinning out and breaking up into tinier pieces.
Yes,
instead of expanding like
yes,
unattended.
As right, an
yeah,
unneutralized chemtrail.
Well, we
this out. And, right.
Yeah, we see these characters sometimes within those clouds that are actually wearing colored suits.
Yes.
Am I crazy or am I telling the truth here?
Right, right. That's true.
We might see one with a green jacket and a red hat, or mm-hmm. or many times it takes on the whole appearance of that. But mm-hmm. in reference to what you're describing about the reptilian features, mm-hmm. we've seen these on otherwise what one would interpret as a human being.
Yes,
we've
right.
seen these characters in color, in their
yes.
full garb.
Yes, exactly. Right.
And they seem to love politicians, don't they?
Yes. Yes, well, you're bringing up something very important. Besides wanting to express this information, to discuss it about spotting etheric images in the sylphs associated with chemtrails, we're seeing these etheric images in these orbs, as in the case of this lady who in her apartment. Mm-hmm. And we're also seeing etheric images in photographs of certain individuals who we are identifying as hybrids, people who have an outer human appearance, but in fact have the capacity to shapeshift into a reptilian-looking form. And with these folks, even when they're in their human appearance, very often we've been able to find photographs such as that of a 10-year-old Barry Sotoro, a.k.a. Barack Obama, in which we enlarged the photo, we cropped out, and we saw numerous etheric images all over the exposed parts of his arms, his hands, his knees, his face. And we've isolated other individuals in other stories in which we've been able to find a great deal of these manifestations of etheric images from the body itself or from the immediate aura of an individual, such as the a 1944 wartime photograph aboard a U.S. aircraft carrier in the Pacific, taken of George Bush Sr., the 41st President of the United mm-hmm. States. We were able to find, totally by accident, right next to his face, a huge etheric figure of what looks like a man's face.
Mm-hmm. Now, that photograph, by the way, was a Polaroid type, I'm fairly certain. It might have been taken with a Hasselblad, but one would question whether or not Polaroid film was available at that time.
Mm-hmm.
However, the image that we saw is one that reoccurs in many, many Polaroid photographs that I've seen over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I was shown a picture of it was a saxophone player in my musical group when I was in Europe.
Yes.
And he was from Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes.
And he had this photo taken by some folks that were visiting from the States, went to see him in Europe, and they wanted to take some pictures back, and they left one of the pictures with him. And when the picture developed, you could see his etheric body and his aura. And it was a phenomenal picture to look at. There was no double exposure. You could not even create a double exposure like that, I think, even with the computer technology we have today.
Right.
It showed up clear as a bell, and he had a very, very large and expansive sort of etheric body that fanned outward towards the floor in the shape of a wedding dress.
Wow.
Really, really magnificent to see this picture, and that's indicative of a very old soul, we'll say. You know, in terms of metaphysics.
Yes.
But these phenomena that you're describing in the different sorts are merely saying that there are things around us all the time that we don't see with our naked eye.
Yes, that's the important point. That's the important point. And that's the whole reason I wanted to just take this show to discuss it, because I would love to see other people jump in, and there are thousands of photos already available on the internet. You don't even have to take your own, but it's a good idea to take your own first, because you should be monitoring the chemtrail activity in your area, and you should be monitoring the sylph reaction.
I think it would be interesting to take pictures of politicians, don't you?
Oh, yeah. There is a gal who's been very busily doing this for a number of years now. I mention her from time to time on my website, and I give her full credit. Her name is Barbara Krause Brown. She has a website called WeAlowaPress.com. WeAloha, like the Indian tribe. And Barbara is very skilled in this. I had no idea about how to use Photoshop for this purpose, but from reading her website, and she gave me the idea to even try it. I had no special training in Photoshop. It was simply a trial and error attempt to magnify pictures and then to try to increase the contrast. She's very good at this, and she's has thousands of photos on her website, a large proportion of them being politicians, relatively famous individuals that she can very easily identify as being these shapeshifter reptilians, because you will see in the photograph the implants that she identifies that they have in their face, often in their ears, or fabulous info she has there. And there's another gal, since we're mentioning names, that I like to give credit to, contacted me a couple years ago, a woman named Jane Tripp, T-R-I-P-P.
No She's relation to Linda, right?
Pardon?
No relation to Linda?
No.
Okay.
None. This gal is up in British Columbia. I think she's in the Vancouver area, and she has unusual psychic gifts, and whenever she points a camera, she will usually find a number of etheric images, including what look like aliens and alien-type creatures, not necessarily of a negative nature. They don't, but she'll get them in full form. She'll take a picture of she's in a semi, sort of rural area there in British Columbia. And when she takes a picture of the road and the forest that's along the edge of the road, when you zoom in, you'll see that they're standing right at the edge of the road there, just beyond the clearing of the trees, what look like alien creatures standing there, and they've got an animal, almost looks like a llama, but it's definitely an alien-looking animal with them. Her photographs are simply amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And she, too, mentions how she finds that you need to magnify pictures, and then you crop, and when you enlarge that crop section to very large pixels, more etheric images show up within the cropped image. So she might be identifying a person in an etheric image of what looks like a human face. Then when she enlarges the face within the eye of that person, there is yet more individuals standing, sitting at chairs. It's simply remarkable what she's getting. There's this whole world of etheric images that show up with digital photography.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating area to explore. And I hope other people will, listening to the show, will simply try it on their own. In some cases, with the articles that I put up, I will upload the full-size image as it came from my camera, which might be 3,000 pixels wide by 4,000 pixels high, so that you can have the full resolution that was available to me. So when you go looking around, you can, and you magnify, you'll still have a fair amount of resolution remaining to see these images that you need to magnify. But if you have a digital camera, if you can spot a sylph, Just go outside and take pictures of both the chemtrails and the sills and start playing with the images in Photoshop and enlarge. And in the beginning, it's you, just try to recognize the sylph, because very often, not always, but very often, they will resemble some sort of animal or creature that you've seen before. Sometimes it's sort of an amalgamation of different creatures into one. In other cases, if it doesn't look like a known animal or a known humanoid type form, the sylph itself will always be symmetrical. So if there's a left wing that's sweeping up and around, on the opposite side, there'll be a right wing that will sweep up and around in exactly the opposite direction. You almost always see full symmetry with sylph. It's one of the giveaways.
Now, one of the phenomenon that you and I have seen quite a bit, in fact, we're becoming quite adept at recognizing these things as we're looking simultaneously across the country at the same picture. We'll be looking at, and for the sake of the listening audience, if I can just give a short explanation. When Ken refers to cropping out an image, what he's talking about, for those of you who aren't familiar with that aspect of photographic study or editing, you cut out a portion, you select a portion of the picture, and save it as if it's a new picture. So it's basically like a puzzle piece. Mm-hmm. And it's a small section of the picture that has been copied and put into a new document so that he can enlarge it and single it out without all the rest of the picture being involved.
Good.
And we see, let's say, Ken makes a crop of one of these faces, one of these images, and then as we're looking at it, all of a sudden, there's another image attached to it. What is the left eye of the creature all of a sudden becomes the right eye of a person looking in a different direction, say, to a 45-degree angle to the right. And once you see that new image, it becomes difficult seeing the first one.
Yes.
You and I have had that experience a number of times.
Yes.
And it's as if these images are interwoven. They're all connected to each other, and they're manifesting out of the same energy. Or
yes,
do you get that feeling?
Oh yes, yes. I mean, this is a, like I said, it's a, to me, it's a fabulous new area of scientific inquiry that is available to us today. Because of the capabilities of digital cameras to capture these things, and then we can see them on our computer screen, but also in the times we're living in, because of this gravity of the chemtrails, you know, poisoning program, it's largely a genocidal operation. They're trying to weaken the immune systems of the bulk of the population of the world, because they want to cull, you know, the best part of humanity to drastically reduce the world's population. And this is serious business, and it's been going on for 11 years now. So we're being assisted by these elementals, these air elementals, are essentially helping us weather this assault.
Mm-hmm.
And if we the more people recognize that there is this phenomena, it's now for the mechanistic minded person who's had a conventional science education, all of this tends to sound like gobbledygook woo-woo talk, but for those who are more open-minded and realize that we're more than just physical beings, and the world is more than a physical arrangement. We are we are spirit and physical matter combined, and the world, in fact, gives the appearance of being physically solid, but we all know it's really energy that is vibrating.
Now, that word sylph goes back to Greek times.
And oh, yes.
So this is not a new phenomenon.
No,
either.
The Greeks clearly saw this. They were open-minded. They were not brainwashed like, you know, people of the 20th century were in school to reject these things as being impossible. They observed them with their eyes. They observed that they took on animal-looking forms, and they could clearly see they were performing a function, a task, mm-hmm. in aiding Mother Nature to produce rain when it's necessary, to produce wind or to temper winds, or they could see from the images that the selves were producing, it seemed to make sense in light of the weather conditions they were experiencing. Z.S. Livingstone, one of the fellows who I regularly feature on my website, he lives in British Columbia, very intuitive guy, very sharp, very psychic person. He wrote a number of essays discussing the nature of sylphs, and they're posted on my website under his name, Z.S. Livingstone. And what he did is, I think it was around 2003, it could have been as early as 2002, but certainly by 2003, he was writing articles in which he says that, at least when he, not in a conscious state, but when he sleeps at night, in the dream state, he can telepathically communicate with sylphs and recall what they talked about when he wakes up in the morning. And he was telepathically told by sylphs that giant sylphs that reside in other planetary systems in this solar system, such as Uranus and Jupiter, were going to come to the United Earth. I almost said the United States. Were going to come to the Earth to assist in neutralizing chemtrails, because the normal population of sylphs that normally reside in our atmosphere, you know, resident Earth sylphs, aren't sufficient in number and size to handle the scope of the poisoning associated with chemtrails, since it's a worldwide mm-hmm. aerosol operation.
I was going to recommend that if he is talking to them and they're suggesting that they're coming to the United States, to make sure they cross over the border between the United States and Mexico. It's a lot easier to get through that way.
Okay, right. Not so much surveillance. Okay. So
gotta get those political jabs in when I can.
So it seemed to me that was perhaps mid late summer of 2003. He wrote that article, and about 6-7 months later, which was early spring of 2004, I first started to notice sylphs. It was Carol Croft. Her and Don Croft had come to visit me, and we were in a parking lot next to a restaurant in the mall, and she was talking about sylphs, and there was a lot of clouds in the sky that day, and I says, well, what do they look like? Well, she said, there's one right there, and she pointed up, and it was the first time I saw a sylph, and I noticed it seemed to have this symmetry. It seemed to have what looks like two wings. Now, I couldn't specifically see a distinct bird shape to it, but I noticed there was this chevron-looking appearance and this wispy, fine, cirrus-like cloud makeup of the sylph looked out of place, because this sylph was in a low altitude. It was in a position where cumulus clouds normally reside, which is the lower strata for cloud formation. You know, usually
the puffy ones. Yeah.
Meteorology, they divide cloud formations into three general categories, the lower level, the mid level, and the upper level. And the upper level is where you see what we call cirrus clouds. You don't see cirrus clouds down at 4,000 or 5,000 feet. Yet that's what I was looking at. The chevron shape, wing-like shape of the sylph was at the lower level. It might have been at 5,000 or 6,000 feet above me, mixed in with what looked like normal cumulus clouds, and also there was chemtrails above that. You know, it was a mixture of cloud layers, including chemtrails. That was the first sylph I saw. And from there, I went to the computer and I went to other websites that were beginning to post these sylph photos, and I quickly began to recognize a sylph from a normal cloud or from a chemtrail, and I began to take pictures myself. And I've been doing it ever since. Every day I look outside, and if there's any cloud activity at all, even normal clouds occasionally, I'll take shots just to show how blue the sky was and how puffy real clouds, cotton ball type cumulus clouds, the way they're supposed to look. But when they're spraying chemtrails, we'll always see these sylph manifestations, and often you won't see real clouds at all, except what will form is in the wake of sylph transmutation and neutralization activity. They will produce clouds of what I call transmuted chemtrail cloud banks. And initially they appear to be small clumps, as it were, at the way a clay desert might look when it's parched. You see what look like clumps. And then those clumps will gradually fuse, though, into a type of cloud bank that has a very unique look to it. It doesn't look like a conventional cumulus or stratocumulus cloud bank. It looks like something's unique, so I call it a transmuted cloud bank. And this is usually what you'll see in the wake of massive sylph transmutation of chemtrails. The chemtrails now are, at least in this area, I think you see it in your area, are transmuted so rapidly they don't have a chance to fan out and to form an overcast like we were accustomed to in the earlier phases of chemtrail bombardment. Now, I do get photos sent to me from by people in different parts of the United States, in Europe, etc., in which you don't see much sylph activity. So you get the typical, grid, tic-tac-toe grid lines of chemtrails laid down. They're fanning out in the conventional way, and they form an overcast. Those folks in those areas got to, A, be aware that sylphs can neutralize chemtrails, B, by just thinking about the sylphs, calling them in to combat the chemtrails in your area, this will bring sylphs into your area. Mm-hmm. You'll get a lot more sylphs who will come a lot faster if you set up some orgone generators in your area. Bigger they are, more powerful the effects. So the big one we use is we put in a 2-gallon or even a 5-gallon bucket. We stick some pipes in it, and we call it a chembuster. That will really bring in sylphs in very large number. They seem to be attracted to orgone generators almost as if they are a beacon calling to them, and they like the energy that an orgone generator will put out in the atmosphere.
Yeah, the orgone generator can emit sort of a bluish light.
Correct.
For those that can see it.
Right. If you can see ours, and we've taken... there's a type of photography called aura photography in which they'll use a high voltage field and take a Polaroid camera, and they usually do it with people to show people the aura around their head and so forth, and people who are skilled at this can analyze the colors and tell them what's going on in their life, etc.,
mm-hmm.
based on the aura. But we did it with an orgone generator. There's a larger one. Either in a dome shape. Sometime we have them available in a pyramid shape, or sometime in a cone shape. Well, anyway, the larger ones that's could be anywhere from 35 to 65 ounces in weight and have crystals and coils and other things in it besides the fiberglass resin and the metal chips. We had aura photographs taken just of that orgone generator, and you see this huge blue ball, radially surrounding the orgone generator. This also used to show up, Chembusters used to show up on infrared weather maps. In the earlier, we started to deploy Chembusters, well, Don Croft started the whole movement in the late fall, early winter of 2001, and by January, February of 2002, I had put up a lengthy article about this phenomenon, Chembusters, and many people began to make them, instructions were there on how to make them. And for the first year at least, we could see this large blue ball over a Chembuster, and it would show up on weather maps. I saved many of them. But what the government did, they caught on to the fact that we were boasting about these huge blue balls, which would extend for miles. It wasn't just a matter of feet. They extended for miles. What they did is they installed computer hardware in the data stream from the satellite to filter out these blue balls so you couldn't see them anymore, because naturally they wanted to convince the world that the Chembuster was having, was of no value whatsoever.
Yeah. Ken, in our closing moments here, I'd like to touch upon the counterpart to this, and you did in a sense when you were talking about these manifestations that we saw really through sensing that they were in the dark sky, the night sky.
Yes.
And when we inverted the photographs is when these grids appeared.
Yes.
So there's a counterpart to the what we would call the white hat sylphs. We can call them the white hats and the black hats.
Yes.
Well, in the cowboy movies, the bad guy wears the black hats. So,
right.
There are new videos out very recently on YouTube, for example, that are showing these anomalies that you and I have talked about in the smoke, in the flames, in the debris, the dust clouds from Ground Zero at the World Trade Center on 9/11.
Yes.
Recently, I've been sharing this information with Dr. Kasim Khalil, who's been on the show a number of times, and he's written about 9/11 from the conspiracy viewpoint, and he has taken an interest in what the actual cause was. And since we have been able to determine that the black hat, I don't know that I would call them sylphs, actually. They're an entity that is definitely quite different, but they appear or they manifest themselves visibly through other means than these natural events. I'm not saying chemtrails are natural, but I'm saying you can see it with the naked eye. The new videos that are coming out from 9/11 are showing, some in slow motion, some sped up, let's say, to double speed, where you can see the clouds manifesting into face after face after face, the things that we have seen in those still photos.
Yes.
That I originally published on my website and told you, wait till you see these images in these clouds.
Yes.
Those we know in two cases appear in the presence of antimatter. And I've looked at films of buildings on fire, and you don't see these manifestations in a normal house fire or apartment fire or office building fire.
In other words, an accidental event, they don't show up.
Yes, but they show up at the World Trade Center, and they show up at the Pentagon as well. Dr. K, as we call him, remarked to me, I've seen one in the smoke at the Pentagon.
Yes.
So this is a phenomenon that is occurring it has a counterpart, in other words, on the dark side.
Yes, right. So what you're saying that is that in events such as 9/11, which was intentional murder.
It was a ritual, yes.
Satanic murder ritual.
Yes.
That had nothing to do with 19 Arab mythological hijackers.
Box cutter wielding hijackers.
Right, right. It was an intentional act of murder so that the demonic forces that are behind the minds who are hatched this plan and carried it out manifest at the moment of that, you know, the event is taking place. Phil Schneider pointed this out in the workshop he did in the August of 1995 in Colorado.
I've seen that, yeah.
His workshop, he mentioned that in the atomic explosions at the Bikini Atoll and also over Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945, that would look like demonic-looking a face appears in the mushroom cloud because it seems to go hand-in-hand with the murderous nature of the event in which you're intentionally taking life, destroying life, that you have these manifestations of what very much looks like a dark, dark, deep demonic entity.
Yeah, this is appearing in, let's say, the more advanced type of weaponry in the nuclear realm, or in the realm of antimatter.
Mm.
The massive implosion of an energy which is counterproductive to nature or natural law.
Right.
So it's the other end of the spectrum that we're talking about here.
Yes, right.
But I have to tell you, there are some new videos. I'll be sending you some links to those. It's going to blow your mind to see these things manifest. And there are, you know, it's quite possible that those that listened to the show picked up on this and they went back and did some research on a lot of the video.
Yes.
It's also, I think, pertinent to point out here before we end the show, if I may do so, mm-hmm. that many of what are being represented as actual films of planes going into the building have more evidence to point out that it appears to be Photoshop or any other kind of editing software
yes.
being used to cause a plane to look like it's flying into the building. When you slow or do a freeze frame, slow motion or a freeze frame of that plane going into the building,
mm-hmm.
it goes, the nose goes into the building, and instead of the building being obliterated, it's like a knife through, a hot knife through butter.
Yes.
It just moves into the building, and yes. actually, in between the frames, the building is healing itself.
Yes, yes, yes.
You can see that phenomenon in stages as the,
right.
as the plane is moving in, which is an indication of using, incorporating Photoshop or some other type of, you know, Photoshop is used like the word Kleenex is used, you know, as a cross brand name to identify
mm-hmm.
something.
Mm-hmm.
So, one particular video is quite interesting. The smoke is blowing to the south. In other words, the wind is blowing, and it's
yes.
blowing to the south. And so the smoke from the towers is blowing to the south. And the tree next to the camera that's taking the shot of the World Trade Center has the leaves blowing in the opposite direction.
Oh, I see.
mm-hmm. There's an anomaly in that film, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's showing a plane coming in. Now, obviously, The tree branch moving in one direction and the smoke moving in the other is already a contradiction. So
yes.
that whole film is bogus.
Okay.
You see, it's to reinforce the concept or the belief that
a
plane flew into the building.
Right.
But they made some mistakes. They made
mm-hmm.
some errors. How
mm-hmm.
can that be a genuine photo when the tree branches which show leaves are bending in a northerly direction, but the wind
mm-hmm.
is blowing to the south. And it's pretty much a straight line win with a UFO in the picture too, by the way.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Again, we have that antimatter or that those fields.
Mm.
Which are helping produce those manifestations.
Mm.
And comparing, and one of the films that actually compares this phenomenon of seeing these metaphysical or these ethereal beasts coming out of the flames and then coming out of the initial clouds.
Yes.
Of smoke,
smoke clouds, right.
Which they want us to believe is kerosene, but as the girders are jutting out a floor at a time with, and they're lighting up. Not only is the building dropping one floor at a time in free fall fashion, but these projectiles are lighting up out the side. What is that? Are those light bulbs? You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's remarkable how recap the whole notion of the 9/11 fairy tale. Future generations are just going to read the story and ask themselves, how is it possible that the Earth's population at the time of 9/11, approximately 6.5 billion, how is it 6.5 billion people could possibly believe such obvious nonsense? It's so plain, a small child can recognize what happened to those buildings. How is it possible that 6.5 billion people would believe the fairy tale that the government and CNN and all the major TV networks tried to convince us happened on that day? It's particularly compelling when you see the video of Building 7 collapsing in a perfect free-fall demolition-type, implosion event.
And that was a building that wasn't struck by an airplane.
It wasn't struck by an airplane. There was the two towers, the North and the South Tower, were each hit by airplane. But that was it. There was only two airplanes that supposedly hit those towers. Nothing hit Building 7. I forget the stories. It's 47, 48, 50 stories are so tall. It's not a small building. And yet it collapsed in a perfect pancake, implosion-style demolition collapse, as did both towers. How is it so many people, without having read anything on the Internet as to the analysis of the residue of thermite discovered, the angled cut in the girders that can be clearly seen in stills and videos following the collapse of the building. How is it that anyone who has a mind, who has any level of intelligence, could say, oh yeah, these two planes crashed into the building, the kerosene spilled down the stairwell, it caught on fire, and magically collapses in 11 seconds, 110-story steel frame building. It's so ludicrous. It just drives me insane. How is it anyone today can believe the government cover story about 9/11?
Well, that's a good point. And you know, I'm wondering why Larry Silverstein isn't giving psychic readings to people.
Yes, right.
You know, he took out an insurance policy against double plane strikes 6 weeks
yes.
before the event.
Right.
Well, you know, to answer that question, you know, when you see newer generations of kids coming here and trying to understand through history or whatever means, maybe through word of mouth by the survivors on this planet, they're going to ask that question: are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Yes.
You know,
right.
Like the TV
right.
show.
TV show, yeah.
It's definitely a sad state of affairs when so many people can be mind controlled to that extent.
Yes.
That they are just in total denial. You'll have people telling you it didn't even happen. And there are new videos out too, Ken, showing no plane, no debris other than a mess in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where the media reports initially, this was kept out of the mainstream, was taken out of the air very quickly, or off the air very quickly, but it has resurfaced on the internet.
Yes.
You can Google Flight 93 and probably find it.
Yes.
Film where the newscasters are basically saying, there's nothing here. There's no sign that there was a plane crash here at all.
Right.
And what we were told about debris being scattered 8 miles was initially reported 3 to 4 miles. Well, there's no evidence of a plane crash. There was a 10-foot hole.
Yes.
In the field where they claimed this plane crashed, and likely the debris was an indication that property, that field, was being used as a garbage dump.
Mm-hmm.
They said they didn't find anything larger than a phone book.
Yes, my own thought about this is just my own speculation. I, of course, others have stated this. This is not an original thought on my part, but this is what I think had happened. I think first there was none of the 19 so-called hijackers that the FBI said were responsible. There is no flight manifest listing these names. A lot of people don't realize that. In other words, all the famous names that they claimed were on the planes, they weren't on the flight, on the passenger list, just for starters. I think it was 11 of them showed up alive and kicking and well in the Middle East. They were discovered, photographed, videotaped.
Yeah, Dr. Kay has written about that extensively.
So that's so. My own thought is that the three planes were diverted to another location. All three planes.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, again, I'm not sure. Either these were specially constructed military planes that flew into the buildings, and/or it was a virtual event, meaning a holographic event.
Mm-hmm.
One of the two, but I don't believe there was humans aboard those planes. If anything, if they were true planes, they were drones.
There's an individual that was alive before 9/11 who supposedly died in the crash of Flight 93.
Yes.
No, take that back. Flight 11. Okay. That was one of the planes that supposedly hit the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
That person is still alive. Okay. I've mentioned that several times, even on the show, but that's something there's a paper trail to this person.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, okay.
So if he's still alive, why is he on the passenger list as deceased?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
And that person happens to be at least a dual citizen with Israel and the United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very interesting connection there.
Yes. Well, that's what my own thoughts is, that all three planes were diverted and landed in some secret location. What happened to the passengers? I don't know. I don't know whether they were, who knows? They might be alive. They might be secreted somewhere. They might be dead. I don't really know. But that's my own thought.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the story that came out, I forget now how long ago, 2 or 3 years ago, the Alex Jones interviewed a pilot, an Air National Guard pilot, who let it be known that he shot down that plane over Pennsylvania. My own take is it's a bogus cover story.
I think so, too. I was going to say that.
In Rumsfeld, in supposedly misspeaking at he was either in Germany or in the Middle East somewhere at a news conference, supposedly blurted out that the one over, was it Flight 93?
Yes.
Over Pennsylvania was shot down. And my guess is that's all psyops there.
Mm-hmm.
To have us think that it was shot down, but of course, officially they want to deny it, but have us wink, wink, believe. I don't think that's the case at all. I think that all three planes were landed at a secret location and that there was some sort of play that took place over Shanksville. There might have been a drone that was hit and exploded to create a fireball. Mm-hmm. That part I don't know. But I think the notion that it was the original Flight 93 with the original passengers, my own feeling is no.
In our closing minute here, let me add that Flight 93 was reported in live radio to have landed in Cleveland, Ohio at Cleveland
yes.
Hopkins International Airport.
Yes.
And that
yes.
they had evacuated the passengers because
yes.
they were searching for a bomb on the plane. Now
right.
that went over the airwaves. Mm-hmm. By that afternoon, the mayor, who then was Michael White,
yes.
had disclaimed the original story.
Yes, right.
Now, the CIA happens to control an airport in Berea, Ohio, and we have Burke Lakefront Airport, two airports. One is downtown, literally in the smack middle of downtown, but at the lakefront. Easily, they could have taken them there, or they could have taken them to NASA's Lewis Research Center, which is roughly a long stone's throw from the runways at the airport. So they could have shuttled them there and taken them elsewhere. They could
yes.
be on Mars, for all we know, right?
Yes,
now.
They could be. There's as you
and that's not tongue in cheek.
That's not tongue in cheek. There are you know bases in both on the Mars and Moon, and we know that they're heavily populated too. So
yes,
yep.
Well, Ken, we're out of time. It's been fascinating, very interesting. Want to encourage folks to go to your website, educate-yourself.org, and check out your current news, especially. Well, any of the pages, really, but that's where I start. I look to see what you're working on, and I usually end up Lord knows where.
Yes. Thank you, Don. I
Somewhere
appreciate
on your that. Site. And I want to thank you for coming on Evident Footprints on such short notice.
Oh, happy to oblige you.
And I'm looking forward to your next appearance on the show.
Thank you.
We got to get you back into the schedule here. I was overworking you, though.
It's okay. I truly enjoy talking to you and these ad hoc conversations, I hope, yield interesting information for the listeners. I feel as comfortable talking to you over the radio show as we do in our private conversations with each other. And I hope the people who listen to the show enjoy listening to our conversation.
And if we don't have a listening audience tonight, this has been a private conversation.
Yes. But we have those archives, which I think are important.
Oh, yes. I'm only kidding. No, I know there are a lot of folks listening, and we appreciate that. Ken, thank you so much for being on the show. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom, twin brothers, by the way, for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next Monday. Great shows lined up all this month, so be sure to tune in again. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.